Greetings and salutations. You've successfully arrived at the Bloody Disgusting Network. The passage of time will now bring you to something strange, unique, and idiosyncratic. Have a good time.
Greetings, constant listeners. It's Jen 2, the Rage Adams. Today we're unlocking an older Patreon exclusive episode from the Dairy Private Library. This one dates back to last December and finds the loser celebrating the most wonderful time of the year by naming 10 Stephen King titles everyone should read under a big fuzzy blanket on Christmas. And if you enjoy a wintry cozy episode like this, you can get even more of them by joining our Patreon at www.patreon.com/thebarons. There, you can find hours and hours of exclusive content we haven't unlocked, from commentaries for your favorite Stephen King films to our in-depth archival series that goes deep into King's uncollected works. For now, though, enjoy this episode, and I'll be seeing you over long days and merry, pleasant nights.
My friendship to all of you precludes my involvement with any one of you. But if you want to make love, then I do too, and I'll be right there behind you.
Greetings, constant listeners, or should I say season's greetings. Welcome to a special holiday episode of The Losers Club, a Stephen King podcast. I am your host for today, Jen 2 the Grinch Adams, and I hope you brought some eggnog because we are talking about Christmas King. Yay! And I'm going to try not to make lots of singing puns, but, you know, we'll see how it goes. That's right, it's the most wonderful time of the year, and if you're anything like me, you celebrate everything with horror. And today we're talking about the best Stephen King stories for the holiday season. No matter what you're celebrating, Christmas, Hanukkah, Solstice, Kwanzaa, or even just relaxing in footy pajamas, this time of year is perfect for horror. Because we're all supposed to be merry and bright right now, but that's just not me. And sometimes I need a really good scare to take the edge off of all of the joyfulness. So today we're going to gather around the Yule log and share our favorite King stories for the holiday season. I like to think of them as little holiday gifts under the literary tree. But before we start unwrapping, and then I wrote a little rap joke in there, but I just don't think I can pull it off, so I'm going to skip it.
No. You can't tease
yeah,
that.
Yeah, just do it. Do it.
Look at what? That's the extent. I need a little more eggnog before I, like, fully commit to the rapping. Let's say hello to our fellow elves and elvettes who are joining me today. So I'm hopping in the sleigh and heading down to Atlanta. And I'm really hoping that our next elf hears me because we recently watched Gremlins and I do not want to try to go down the chimney. So who is joining from Atlanta?
This is Dan Dillo Caffrey, because Dan Dillo is kind of Christmassy. He lives in a Christmassy land, I think, in the Dark Tower Part 7. Yeah, we did watch. That was so, I'm so excited for Gremlins. Is this now? Will this be out before the Gremlins episode on Psychoanalysis?
Probably, because that's dropping on Christmas Eve. So
that's right. Oh yeah. Yeah, you don't want to go down the chimney. You'll break your neck. Your daughter
that's
and
true.
Wife will think it's a bird, a dead bird or a cat.
I know. And then they'll hate Christmas forever.
So. I did see right before this, Susan and I were driving home from voting. If you're in Georgia, go vote, please. And I saw an owl perch on top of the telephone line. And I got out of the car to go look at it because I feel like you don't see owls a lot. I don't know. I feel like you never see them in the wild a lot. And I looked up at it and just looked down at me and wasn't going anywhere. So it was spooky, but also very majestic and beautiful.
Very
and
Twin Peaks.
I feel like it said it was going to, it said, Dan, you're going to have a great episode tonight with everyone.
Oh,
so.
Nice.
No, I really did see an owl. It was really cool.
I like owls, man.
It was really, I feel like you never see him. You might see him flying, but when do you see them standing still? And he just, he looked down at me. It was very cool. So happy to be
That's
here.
Cool.
did it turn its neck all the way around, or was it just staring at you already?
It did. It, like, because I was below it, it creaked its head down at a grotesque angle. It didn't do the Secret of Nim thing where it turns its head all the way around and turns its head upside down.
So it was one of those,
but, yeah.
It was an up and down owl, not a side to side owl.
Yeah, very much an up and down owl. I guess if I don't know owl species, I guess maybe a tawny owl. It was like brown with black rings around it, right, like around its head. Screech owls are small. It was big. It was a full sized owl. So,
yeah. Screech owl. Were they like some Zach and Kelly owls?
There's a Lisa
owl.
Turtle under the tree.
Lisa turtle doves.
There you go. That's probably better than mine.
Silver
anyway.
Belding.
Oh, nice.
Lots of Saved by the Bell puns we have. Yeah. There,
that's true. Well, speaking of jingle bells, I had a whole Counting Crows thing written, and I was even going to sing Counting Crows because I thought we were going to Omaha. But we are going to Boise, Idaho to pick up our next Elvette. So who is joining me from somewhere in middle America but a little north than I thought it was?
Hi, I'm Rachel Reindeer Wrangler Reeves.
Nice.
I'm a record slinger by day, freelance writer at night, mainly for Nightmare on Film Street and Rue Morgue.
Awesome. Well, we're so glad you're joining us today to talk about
Christmas.
Me too.
I'm very interested.
You have such a festive setup behind you, too. I'm looking at your lights.
Yeah.
Oh, yes. Thank you. Yes, I've got a net of Christmas lights and a Ghostbusters blanket to hide my outside. So, yeah. It's
the outside world.
Yeah, to hide the outside world.
You've really bunkered down, apparently.
Are you also wearing a Power Corruption and Lies shirt, too, from
Television? Oh, yes. Yeah. I work at a record store, so it's kind of like, you know, required uniforms, the flannel and the New Order shirt. So.
I said Joy Division. I'm sorry, everyone. I love that record. That and Movement. Excellent, excellent.
And finally, I really want to see some snow, so let's hitch up the reindeer and fly north to Chicago to pick up our final caroler, although I think I said earlier they're elves, so they're caroler elves. Mm-hmm. Who is joining us from the merry state of Illinois?
Well, I've got my songbook down for the moment. This is Justin Juniper Hill Gerber.
Ah, nice.
you know, obviously in Maine, it's snowing all the time. That's the stereotype that we've all embraced over the years. But here in Chicago, it has not snowed. There's been some flurries.
Oh, yeah?
But there really has not been a lot of snow on the ground. And of all the years for that to not be happening, thank God this is the year. So I'm still able to go outside and go on walks without having to worry about slipping on black ice or something like that.
Seriously.
So
Where was all the snow this weekend, or this week, like in the Northeast, I guess, right? Like, I know my parents
Even Iowa got nailed.
Really?
Yeah. Iowa got nailed. Yeah, definitely Northeast. Real bad. Somebody that we used to work with, they were posting some insane amount of snowfall that they were getting. So, again, that's cool. Good luck. But we're good.
Hey, send it my way. I love snow, and
I love snow too.
I love it too, but when you don't have a car and there's ice all over the place, I need to walk around somewhere. And there's nowhere to walk if there's ice all over the place. I'd be trapped in my apartment.
They said Atlanta was maybe going to get it this week with the tail end of that snowstorm, which I guess maybe that would have meant you would too, but yeah, we didn't. It's really cold here now, but yeah, no snow.
No, it's cold, but it's not.
Yeah, it is cold. Yeah.
Not brutal.
So if it's going to be cold, I want snow. Of course, that's also like, as a former teacher, I always wanted snow because then it would be a snow day. So, you know.
Excuse me, as a teacher, are you legally allowed to say that? As a former teacher?
I'm no longer a teacher. Oh, gosh. Teachers want the snow days more than the kids want the snow days.
I'd imagine.
Oh, wow.
Kids right now, snow days aren't a thing, right? At all. It depends on if your school is in person. But if your school is not in person, the teachers are probably like, screw you, you're coming to class, you're opening that screen.
Right.
You
got to show up.
Unless there's like
put
a reception issue.
On.
That's all I can think of.
That's true. Oh, yeah. There's
snow knocking out my
Wi-Fi.
Yeah, it's like crazy. Yeah.
Just shaking your laptop.
Darn.
It's a snowstorm.
Right. Well, speaking of snowstorms, this is not going to connect, but I'm going to make it. We've consulted with important North Pole scientists who also study snowstorms. There it is. Known as Justin, and he crunched some numbers, which means he applied the patented Gerberlytics to the equations, and we have come up with our list of our top five favorite Stephen King stories to read around the holidays.
Yeah, this was a good 72 hours of breaking down the 20 choices condensing them down to about 7 or 8, depending on the village, of course. Consulting many other firms who are also very good at statistics. I don't want to name names, but we do appreciate MIT. And I said, you know, at the end of the day, I have to trust myself and the Losers Club. And so I said, bye-bye. And I went with our own numbers. And I'm pretty happy with what we all came up with.
I am too. Yeah. Now I have to know, was the beep, boop, 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 was that playing like the entire time that you were crunching these said
numbers?
It
was. You know, we've kind of moved beyond, you know, the noises having to happen. But I do like the ambience. It makes me feel smarter than I actually am. And it makes me kind of nostalgic for a time where we needed to have those like green lights beep up, beep up, beep up, beep up, as though it's computating, as though it's computing. Mm-hmm. So yeah, it was a lot of fun to kind of revisit the old days of Tandy computers. Nice.
Yeah, if you throw in a little red lights, then it's Christmas numbers. You know,
exactly. A little sheet of paper.
You
comes
are a
out,
Christmas scientist, right?
I only exactly. deal in Christmas science, which means I still do surgeries. So,
of course,
I still see the doctor.
And we should clarify too, right? Because there was some confusion that for King stories, novels were game, individual novellas were game, and short stories were game.
We couldn't do different seasons or Night Shift, the collection. We could do stories or novellas from those, but yeah.
Yes, and spoiler, we have some of those on the list. But yeah, that was a hot debate about what was and was not acceptable for part of our list. But we have a list of our top five, and these are the stories, or the titles, I guess I would say, that we just want to read around the holidays, or we want to recommend to people if you're looking for a little holiday horror. And our first story was Battleground, which was not something I was expecting to be on the list, but I'm really excited to talk about it. It's a short story in Night Shift where a stone-cold assassin is sent a mysterious box of military toys that come to life and attack him. And Rachel, this was your suggestion, and you actually won me over on this in our email thread, and I voted for it in our runoff, and I would love to hear why this is a great story for Christmas.
I always think of this as a Christmas story. I know it's just as simple as it is. It's just the toy factor. And I first became familiar with it from the film version. And I think that they actually do a little bit better job establishing like the toy factory and the toy magnet that Renshaw goes to assassinate at the beginning. And I think that it really kind of sets it up to feel really Christmassy. You've got the toy shop and all the different toys. And then when he finally does go to his house and, you know, all these little army dudes are attacking him, it just, I think that whimsicalness of it, you know, despite the fact that it's dealing with this, you know, professional hitman, I think that it, yeah, just, it really does kind of just have that childlike wonder to it a little bit in, you know, a Stephen King way.
Yeah.
Yeah, I feel like too, because there are so many classic Christmas stories that do have to do with toys coming to life and becoming sentient, right? I mean, I don't know, I guess Toy Story is not technically a Christmas movie, but I don't know. There's that end scene at Christmas, right? I think it came out around Christmas originally, so I feel like I associate that. One of my favorite Christmas toy-related movies is The Christmas Toy, which is a Jim Henson movie also about toys that come to life. And so I feel like this is sort of the nightmare version of that too. Like, I feel like if you did a certain kind of adaptation, hey, why not set it at Christmas time with the assassin, right? You could actually make it into a pretty macabre little Christmas film.
I'm not sure what time of year it takes place exactly. I don't actually remember what time of year.
I can't remember.
But it does feel, the setting always feels really cold too. Like, it's not in the summer for sure. And Renshaw, when he goes back to his house, it's like in the middle of a city and he's, you know, got this fancy apartment and everything. So it does feel cold to me, whether that's in like tone or like literal temperature. So I do feel it does fit in that way as well.
I feel like so much of this stuff also gets informed, like you said, once you see the adaptation, right?
Yeah.
So all I can really see now, even though I read this years before I saw the adaptation, is William Hurt in this kind of off blue apartment building with, you know, no decoration, like wearing like a, I feel like he was like wearing like a black trench coat the entire time, but that's all I can see. So like you said, I am now informed by this chilly atmosphere because of the adaptation, not necessarily because of how I saw it, you know, 25-30 years ago.
Yeah.
Jen, have you seen the adaptation? I still haven't. I've been meaning to ever since we did the Night Shift episode.
I have, and we're talking about the episode in Nightmares and Dreamscapes TV, right? Yeah,
and it's confusing
because
they take like night shift, because the Nightmares and Dreamscapes series isn't all Nightmares and Dreamscapes stories, right? There's a couple. And
there are a couple.
I think there's because I know that there's Crouch End, which is Skeleton Crew, and then I think most of them are Nightmares and Dreamscapes, but there's also some night shift in there. I watched that, and I was on the episode where we covered it. And that was the one that I really liked. I think that's the best of the entire series. And when I was watching it, because I haven't read the story in years, it kind of gave me, now that we're talking about it, like his apartment reminds me of the apartment in Nicolas Cage has in A Family Man, you know? Like rich, fancy assassin, and he doesn't have time for love and Christmas decorations, you know? And so I think the toys kind of, you know, teach him to love in a certain
way. The Family Man's kind of, the toys teach him. I mean, he does go through an interesting moral journey, because from what I remember in Battleground, isn't he kind of negotiating a truce almost between them? We see him get a little bit vulnerable. Would y'all consider The Family Man a Christmas movie? I've never seen that either.
I think was a Christmas movie, wasn't it? Because that definitely takes place during
I remember it being Christmassy, but maybe, I hope I'm not just confusing that because it has snow in it, but I think
all of the selections today are basically solely because there's a lot of snow.
For me at least,
these are like, oh, number one. This is what I think about when I think of Christmas.
Right.
The Family Man trailer has it's got the obvious music drop where he walks in and you're like, you may ask yourself, this is not my beautiful house. This is not my beautiful life. And it's just like
literally
the movie.
What the movie's about.
It's so, so obvious. Oh, God. Never forget that trailer.
It's funny that Nick Cage, I can't remember any. Has he done a Stephen King movie? I feel like he's kind of ripe to do like a Mist or something like that. But I don't think, I might be wrong. I don't think he's done a Stephen King movie.
I don't think he has. Which is shocking.
Yeah.
I know.
Actually,
now that you say this.
Like, why wasn't he in Cell? You know, like that type of thing.
Right. he does. I feel like he does so well with genre material. And I don't know. I watched Color Out of Space recently, and I liked it a lot more. I know you're not a fan of that movie, right, Justin?
I usually love Nicolas Cage when he goes unhinged, but if he had matched the mood of literally every other character in the movie, that'd be one thing.
I didn't think he was that overblown in that. I was expecting to see more of a maniac.
A lot of people were laughing in the theater, I'll say that.
Yeah.
It was a little,
I just wonder, because I feel like he can do the bonkers stuff where King stories tend to go, but I do think he can still be grounded and bring some pathos to a role.
Back to it. It's funny we got here. I would like to see Nick Cage in another adaptation of Battleground.
That would be amazing.
Right?
Because
he could definitely take care of a scene on his own.
He's
over the top.
All these little toys.
So to see him having to fight off these little army soldiers would be very funny to me. In a good way.
There's so little dialogue actually between like Renshaw and, you know, the soldiers or whatever's happening there. And they do, I think, do a good job about that in the adaptation. Like, I don't actually think William Hurt has like any dialogue.
Yeah, I don't think there's any dialogue in that. I think that was kind of the big note about that, was that there wasn't no dialogue at all in that segment.
And I think that would be something that Nicolas Cage would actually be really good at, because he's so like physical and he can do so much with his face. And then when he does lose it, like, it would just be like that much more satisfying.
Can you imagine an explosion at the end, just saying, yeah, fuck you.
Yeah.
Fuck you. You know, I mean, I can see it all now. This has to happen.
What if he has the hair from Con Air, too?
Oh, God. Oh, my
gosh.
The hair in Con Air.
Yes,
and he's still wearing the William Hurt trench coat and still has the gross hair from Con Air. Let's do it.
Yeah. I mean, I feel like, why has this not been done already? It's just sitting right there, you know?
That's the dollar
sitting
baby.
Home in New Orleans or wherever, listening to this, like, yeah, they're right.
They're right. You know, they're really right about this.
Yeah. Exactly.
Dollar baby. All right. Do it.
Well, our next story on the list is a heartwarming story of a nurse and her patient. And this is Misery, is number 4 on our Christmas King list. There's a lot of snow in this one, too, which I think is going to emerge as a theme in this episode. And Justin, this one was on your list. What do you find merry about Misery?
Well, it's funny because I'm thinking about it also just in terms of the season itself and the current circumstances that we're all in, many of us are in, especially people who have to deal with a lot of snow. And so, you know, to me, this entire year, we've all been dreading being snowed in and not being able to do anything or go anywhere and walk around. And mm-hmm. obviously, of all the Stephen King books, you could say Misery best captures that. So I'm thinking about right. this particular Christmas season. I keep thinking about Misery, but at the same time, I live on my own, and I have been living on my own during this entire pandemic. And this also reminds me that sometimes it's okay to be alone, because you could find yourself with an Annie Wilkes trapped for a year indoors. So honestly, those are the two big things that crept out. Obviously, the snow of that story being such a dominating factor, and living through major blizzards, especially around this time of year. And being from Florida and Arizona, you know, you have this idyllic idea of what Christmas is, and like the peak of what a holiday can be for this time of year. And I always had in my head heavy snowfall, you know, fireplaces, chimneys, because you just don't have snow and really even fireplaces in Florida or Arizona. There's no real point, you know? Mm-hmm. So I just always think about those two images all the time. And so whenever I think of Misery, I just think of a house and then just endless amounts of white snow. Ergo, I think of Christmas. I think of this time of year. Happy holidays to Paul Sheldon and Annie Wilkes.
did they mention, because he's trapped for a long time in Misery. I'm trying to remember. I mean, I read it not that long ago, but did they mention the Christmas holiday or anything? I feel like Annie would get him a present, or because she gives him stuff throughout the book. I'm trying to remember if they mentioned Christmas specifically, though.
Because she obviously gives him gifts, right? Here and there. Mm-hmm. She gives him like the typewriter and everything. But isn't there something that after he gets his thumb cut off where he gets a gift, and that's when he makes a joke about the thumb being cut off or something? I don't remember.
I don't remember Christmas being part of it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Unless they blew through it and were like, yeah, then there was the holiday, and then we moved on to January, February.
Or it could have been like January where he, that's when the accident happens. But yeah, I feel like that would have been mentioned in the story, especially since like the birthday cake is a part of it. Like, who, Lord knows what kind of Christmas gift she would give him.
He was actually born on December 25th, so that might be an indicator.
Okay, that's why. You know, this is for Christmas and your birthday, Paul. Yeah,
this is just a good story, I think, to read again, especially if you're up north. It just really sets the scene, right? To be chilly, you know, 20 degrees outside, and then just snow against your window. I can't think of anything better than reading Misery. As strange as that might sound, but in terms of the atmosphere, let's go.
It's kind of tragic in a way, because if Annie wasn't a murderous, depressed psychopath, her house would be a pretty fun place to be during Christmas. It's like a cozy farmhouse. Even thinking about the Misery poster, seeing the snowed-in cabin or farmhouse kind of sandwiched between the two mountains or in the valley, it looks a little pleasant, nice. I feel like if you had a nicer host, maybe one Kris Kringle.
Mr. Kringle.
it would be nice to be in that farmhouse right now in the holiday. Yeah,
Paul could leave some milk and cookies.
Laughing shack. Yeah.
If
she lets him out.
Yeah. And that's part of what I also kind of relate to Christmas, and maybe this is like telling about my own past with the Christmas, but I think that like that feeling of Paul, like especially early on, he's like trapped there and he's like being polite, but like he doesn't really want to be there with this other person, but she's, you know, she hasn't actually done anything other than just be a little weird, but you can't leave, you know, and a lot of times people at Christmas have to like get stuck with your family, and you're like, yep, this is great. Thanks
looking
so
for
much
the exit.
Yeah,
are you a big we talked about this last time, or at least on psychoanalysis we were saying if we're all like Christmas people, are you a big Christmas person, Rachel? Like, I mean, we see the lights in the background, but are you?
Yeah.
Sounds like maybe you're not. I don't know.
Those are just their year-round. I mean, it's just a coincidence.
Yeah, these are just my year-round Christmas lights.
The brightest and cheapest.
But yeah, I don't mind Christmas. I mean, luckily I don't have like a giant family, but I have like in the past like been in relationships with people, and you're like stuck at a family gathering of like people you don't really know for a few days, and it's just so awkward sometimes. So I don't like that part of Christmas. I like the presents part of Christmas, though. I like giving presents to people I care about. So.
Yeah, I like presents too. Yeah, I like receiving them too. I'm not gonna lie.
Yeah.
It's nice to get a Christmas.
Stop the press. You like to get presents?
I'm a monster. Sound like a materialist, selfish person, but yeah.
You're just supporting the economy, right? know.
Yeah, man, hey, yeah. I love small business. I love Amazon.
Yourself, I exclusively shop at Amazon.com.
Right now, we gotta get the economy going. Everyone buy each other presents. We're actually not
Dan,
doing
Dan, trickle down economy. Come on. Say it with
me. It works, right? They said today, that study came out, it said the trickle-down economy,
years,
we've all been
said
criticizing.
It works.
It worked. Everyone's rich now. Mm-hmm. It's great.
Clearly,
oh, yeah. It's great. Yeah. Yeah, I love this book, and it's one of my, it's probably in my top five of King's books.
Absolutely.
And it's the snow, I do think, is what makes me think of Christmas. But we talked about this on Psych Analysis. I've just been kind of a Grinch the last couple of years and just not really into it. And I think a lot of that is just kind of shedding old traditions. So like when I was thinking about the ones that I wanted to talk about, they were like the darker ones where it was like kind of the and especially another one we're going to talk about, like the ones where people are pretty miserable. And that just was kind of what I was connecting to. My family lives in town, so I don't really have that experience of spending the night at like going to stay for several days. Mm-hmm. And my husband's family, they live, when we were still visiting them, they lived like an hour and a half away, which I always said was like the perfect amount because
distance,
it was like it was close enough to be a day trip but far enough that it's not a stop in, you know. So it was, but I could just imagine spending the night. I've done that once or twice and it was just not fun. And it was miserable.
Misery.
You know.
Our own misery
starring Jen's family.
Exactly.
Their in-laws.
Right. Misery's Christmas.
It just turns out your mother-in-law is Annie Wilkes. Like, just like not like she's just the character Annie Wilkes.
I mean, you're joking, but there's a kernel of truth there.
Answers the door of the sledgehammer, or I guess that axe. If we're talking about the book.
I do have a random question for everybody. Is when you found out about this episode, did you immediately go to uplifting?
No,
I didn't go to uplifting per se, but I was trying to think of novels that would make me nostalgic for Christmas. Like, sure. I love Gremlins and Krampus and Batman Returns and, you know, a lot of Christmas, even Black Christmas films that aren't necessarily uplifting. In fact, they're kind of horrific, but they all do have an atmosphere that makes me really enjoy the holiday. Like, Black Christmas to me, as miserable as that movie is, it looks gorgeous. I mean, it really does look cozy and icy, and I love the glow of the lights. So I wasn't trying to think of uplifting, but I was trying to think of stories that really captured a certain Christmas spirit that I could enjoy independently of all the macabre content in the book.
Well, you said it. I mean, that's what I thought of, because initially I thought uplifting. So I started thinking about all the uplifting ones, but they really didn't fit into the winter / Christmas theme. But then that's what I thought. I thought, wait a minute. I also love Black Christmas, so it's okay not to have to be so jolly about our selections here.
Yeah.
There's definitely uplifting Stephen King stories we could have chosen.
I think it's more like atmospheric and like
the
vibe of Christmas rather than like the uplifting part of it. What you're saying.
That snow.
There were a couple when we talk about our choices that didn't make the list. There were a couple that I chose that had. Oh, there's a sweet dog in the background. Sorry, I know listeners can't see it, but there's Rachel's got a, is a boxer. Aww.
She's a boxer.
Yeah. Bella Bambina.
What's her name?
Bella.
Bella.
This is Bella.
Yeah. After Bella Thorne? Or after Bella from Twilight?
Well, she's adopted from the pound, so I don't actually know, but I like to say it's Bella Lugosi.
Good. Oh, is it with one L or two?
One L.
It's cool.
Got two L's, but we'll just say it's a typo.
Yeah, we'll stretch it.
You can add a G to make it all sync up.
Yeah.
Lugosi.
I love boxers. But where were we? We got distracted by the wonderful dogs.
By dogs,
right. Oh, no, but there were a couple, that didn't make the list, that had explicit Christmas references in them or Christmas imagery or Christmas scenes. But when I think about the whole, and I know we'll talk about those later, but when I thought about the whole piece of work, it didn't necessarily feel Christmassy.
You know what's funny is it would have been perfect to do his son's Nosferatu.
I thought about that.
Christmas town.
Yeah.
Yeah,
that deals with explicit Christmas imagery and the wintry themes and all that stuff too.
Oh, well, can't do it. Cannot legally say it.
I was thinking more like what I would want to read on Christmas, you know? And I'm like, my honorable mention is maybe the most uplifting thing he's ever written.
I would agree.
Oh, yeah. I'm excited
maybe
to hear
to
about
a fault.
I really like what you're going to talk about. I heard negative things about it before I read it, and I was quite moved by it. I really enjoyed it. Yeah. So I'm excited to hear about that.
I don't think it's necessarily bad. I just don't think it's... It's definitely uplifting.
Yes.
And
yeah,
more ways
like
than one.
In the title. Exactly. Yeah, yeah. Well, and so since we're talking about it now, I can just go ahead and say what it is
to alleviate
the suspense. My honorable mention, I poured one out for Elevation, which is, I really liked it. And I think a lot of it was I read it at the perfect time.
I believe it. Yeah.
I got it for Christmas, and I had just left my job of 13 years, and I didn't know exactly what my next job was going to be. So I was kind of in this space of just like kind of felt like I was kind of drifting a little bit. And I read this book, and it's just like pure positivity. And it and I read it in like a day or two. So it was like, I can see the flaws if I looked with a cold eye, but it just, it made me feel really good. And it was exactly what I needed to read. And I read it like at New Year's, I think. So
it's
that time of year.
It's still up for debate because I think it says it's a novel on the cover, but a lot of the publicity said
it's like a
novella.
Short story, though.
And it feels so short, you know? Like, what is this
because
thing?
Because it's short and it's physically short.
Yeah, even
so
the copies.
So it's not like full pages.
I know.
Yeah.
It's,
I mean, that's how it lifts up, so, you know.
Ah, so
it's,
easily.
It's
weightless.
Lighter. Exactly.
I loved it. It was like a Ray Bradbury story to me. I loved it.
Yeah. Oh, you liked it too?
It takes place at Castle Rock, right? From what I remember.
I think so.
But it's very strange because there's no allusions to any characters from any other books or anything. It was kind of a weird decision, I thought.
I think I gave
it's
that
like
the
modern
old,
Castle Rock.
I think that was like a five-noser for me on Goodreads. So I really liked the
allusion.
So yeah. I mean, I'm a generous
David Copperfield, player. Elevation.
yeah. Thomas Pynchon's V.
V.
Beloved.
Hey, Toni Morrison's Beloved, 5 stars out of 5 on Goodreads.
Oh, absolutely.
Check me out on Goodreads.
I wish they had 10 star scales. That would be. I could give more accurate ratings then. But
that's kind of a ghost story in a way.
I think Beloved.
Or is
scary.
It? No spoilers.
I've heard it described as a ghost story.
It's a ghost story. I think the ghost is very real and beloved. But I know there's a big debate about
it. It's not a fun
I mean, it
read,
really matter,
but it's a great read.
Yeah.
Speaking of Beloved.
Right. What did we love for our third one? Yeah. Our third story on the list is another from Night Shift, and this is One for the Road. And this is a coda, since that's the craze right now, to Salem's Lot, where a young family is stranded in the snow at night near the infamous Salem's Lot. And I feel like I'm dancing around the spoiler for a book that this podcast has talked about a lot, and it's like 40 years old. There's vampires in it. It's snowy vampires, which is just amazing. And this one was on multiple lists, but Justin, I think you had it at number one, right?
I did. And this is... this is one of Stephen King's best short stories. Mm-hmm. And
I agree.
I'm still somebody who loves television and his adaptations. I just don't understand how this hasn't been adapted for Creepshow that's on Shudder right now. It would cost nothing, right? There's no special effects in this, really. I mean, I know there's one great moment where I think there are no footprints in the snow, right? You see like the kid hovering. Just the simple, that's easy to do, right? I just love a couple things about this.
Snow in a bar. And that's
snow in the bar.
And you get
this
the bar.
This is the opposite of misery for me, is instead of being trapped inside while there's a snowstorm, now you're trapped outside in a place you're not familiar with. And oh yeah, they're vampires that have just taken over this town in a way. And I don't know. I think it's a great story. And I guess we can kind of spoil it here. But I also love the framing of it is something else I also miss a lot. It's just, and granted that it's unfortunate circumstances, but... hearing, I think he hears a story at a bar, right? And they tell and they warn him about it. But I haven't been inside a bar in like 9 months.
When funny is like,
nostalgia is real. You know,
I think that this story would have made our lists anyway, right? It's snowy. It's in the winter. It's scary. It's homey. But what I was really thinking about when we were making our lists and why I put it so high as well is that I keep thinking about Chicago bars in the winter are such a specific aesthetic.
Yes,
like going into I mean, it's funny, they're both closed now, but like Time Out or Guthrie's, there's a certain type of glow that emanates from them in the winter, and there's a coziness that comes with being inside. And so in addition to the wintry, scary vampire stuff, I really was thinking more about, oh yeah, what does it feel, not only what does it feel like to be in a bar, especially right now, because none of us have been in one, unless some of y'all are being bad boys and girls, I guess. But yeah, I haven't been in one since March. And not only is it that, it's also, what is it like to be in a bar during the winter in a place where it's really cold? I think that's a specific aesthetic that actually feels very comforting and cozy, and coupled with the horror, that to me is what makes it the ultimate King Christmas story.
Also the deleted scene of him running into Santa at the very end.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
This kid doesn't want a present.
Right. Maybe Santa is a vampire. That's the story.
He only shows up at night. You never see him during the day.
Exactly. Yeah. He stores up all his energy. Yeah. Rachel, what were you going to say?
Oh, the thing that I love about it, just the simplicity of the story. Mm-hmm. And I mean, I love how it ties into the bigger, like, Salem's Lot thing. I mean, I'm a sucker for that kind of stuff all the time. Like,
you're
any
what?
Little, like, connection.
Oh, nice.
Very good.
I thought Jim was going to just pounce on that pun.
I know.
Yeah.
I'm still thinking about Santa vampire.
Yeah. So anytime you can make little connections between the stories and worlds and stuff, I immediately love that. But it is like, it's really short. It's really concise. Hmm. But it's also, it's nothing more than it needs to be. Mm-hmm. And it's just a perfect little quick read, which I think is really nice when thinking about like Christmas reads, you know, just something ideally, you know, you're by the fire, like in bed or whatever, just something quick and then you're done. I just think it's great. I love it so much.
Stocking stuffer of a story.
Yes, a little stocking stuffer.
You know what's a stocking stuffer is the Elevation novella/novel.
It is.
Which easily fits into a stocking.
It was actually in my stocking.
Yeah.
You know, the stocking it rips the stocking a little bit.
I woke up one Christmas and I saw Under the Dome sitting underneath my broken stocking.
Like your mantle was in pieces and like partly on fire.
Fireplace just collapsed.
I think I did get I got the first edition of Under the Dome for Christmas when it came out, and I remember it being like just on the airplane taking it back. Yeah. Just like, God, this is so heavy.
Mm-hmm. They had to run it through twice just to make sure it wasn't an actual weapon.
Oh yeah, see if there's like a rock hammer carved in it or something. I had One for the Road, I think, on my list, and it's funny, it's like the dichotomy of the super cold snow outside and then the warm bar, which I think is really comforting and reminds me of The Thing in a lot of ways, which is another one that's not Christmas but has that kind of like hunkering down together kind of feel, like I imagine drinking like butter brandy or something. And it's the old-timey bar, which I just love. There's like a comfort there. But the thing that I love about it, and kind of like growing up, what we were talking about, growing up in Nashville, like it doesn't snow that often, so I kind of have this obsession with it, and I think it's like, it's so cool when it snows. And so like there's, and this is, if I think about one of the things that I love in the new Star Wars, and I'm not going to go down a whole trail, so don't at me, but like it's really cool to see like lightsabers in the snow, you know?
Yeah. Seriously.
And like, when do we see snow vampires? You know, I know there's 30 Days of Night, which has Josh Hartnett in it, so it's amazing, but like it's just so cool to see that like these two things that we don't really see together often thrown together. And I also think that like I like to think they're on their way to like grandmother's house or something, and that maybe there's Christmas presents in the back of the car that gets pulled over to the side of the road, because it is like a family traveling to kind of an unknown destination in the winter, so you know, maybe it's belated Christmas or something.
Yeah.
But before we move on to our number two, I just have to say I have been workshopping it, and I would like to formally pitch Sampire, which is a Santa vampire movie that I think we need to start working on. Tagline is, now I'm a vampire, ho, ho, ho. Because I
Very
will
good.
Just quote Die Hard forever.
Yeah, Die Hard. Maybe this person works for Sandpiper. It's possible.
Ah,
we don't know.
Renfield is Hermie the Elf from Rudolph. And
nice.
Yukon Cornelius is Van Helsing.
Oh my god!
I mean, the possibilities are endless. We need to make this happen.
So much. There's so much lore for both of those figures, for both Santa and Dracula.
I love it.
I don't know why people haven't done this before. Well, speaking of insanity, our next number two on the list is The Shining. And I probably don't need to tell you what this one is about, because I think it's a little-known King novel about a haunted hotel. But this was on 3 out of 4 lists. And Dan, I think you had it very high on your list.
I did. Yeah, I mean, The Shining, it's funny because I could be wrong. I have to go back and look. I don't know if I had Misery on my list. Do you have the original ones, Jen?
I think we need to consult Dan,
you did not have
Christmas
Misery.
So I did not have Misery. I mean, I was happy, obviously, to talk about
Analytics,
it.
The Gerbilytics show, you did not have a Misery on your list.
little piece of paper, little fortune cookie paper comes out. Dan, you did not have Misery. But the reason I had Misery, or The Shining over Misery, is because I feel like in The Shining we get, because Misery's trapped inside the whole time, right? And theoretically they're trapped in The Shining, but we do get to experience a lot more of the outside elements with The Shining. So the hedge creature's covered in snow.
Mm-hmm.
There's a snow plow in it. There is a lot of going around the grounds outside of the hotel when it is snowing. Like, I feel like the physical element of snow plays a much larger part in The Shining than it does in Misery. Misery, he's pretty much in the house almost the entire time, right? And so I think that was why I put Shining up there. Winter just seems like a much more omnipresent force. It's a, you might say it's a character in itself. Might see the Overlook is a character. It's the secondary antagonist. And even though, once again, The Shining is a novel that takes place over a fairly long period of time while they're stuck in the Overlook. Do they mention Christmas? It's been a little while since I've read The Shining. Do they mention it in the book?
I think so. I know they've got a big turkey or a capon for
Christmas. So it might be one of the few King novels where there's actual explicit Christmas references. I mean, it's funny. We talked about this on the Halloween King episode, how even though he's the master of horror, he actually doesn't have a ton of novels that take place explicitly at Halloween or even reference Halloween in any kind of meaningful way.
Something we hate up Halloween? A lot. Am I crazy?
Does he? He might. Is he like, I celebrate Halloween every day of the year?
I think there's some. I don't want to put that out there. I could have sworn there's some review where he actually does not like Halloween.
I could see that. Maybe he feels like they're commodifying horror or something. Maybe. He's a guy, they're just putting on their cheap
plastic
masks.
Well, imagine people just won't leave him alone on Halloween because the master of horror, you know. And then I was thinking, I wonder if Nicholas Sparks gets the same stuff at Valentine's Day.
Oh, God.
Got to know what he thinks about Valentine's Day. Yeah. Well, that's true.
And the novel that came up during Halloween, the Halloween King, was Cycle of the Werewolf, because that touches on pretty much every major holiday, I think with the exception of Thanksgiving, maybe. Cycle of the Werewolf is the only one I can really think of where they really explicitly reference all these holidays. And it's just funny because you feel like King would reference them more, both Christmas and Halloween. But yeah, I think The Shining might be one of the few that actually has some Christmas references. So
there is an interview with Conan O'Brien, sorry, Dan, in which it's called Stephen King Hates Halloween. So I guess.
Oh, really?
There you go.
That's great. That's I got to read that. But yeah, and so it's it's funny because I was also thinking about, how much are we talking in terms of quality for these lists, right? Like, these aren't necessarily my top 5 favorite
King works
or anything.
However, as we'll see when we get to number one, I don't think that we would have necessarily ranked above, you know.
We'll talk about that in a second, yeah. And I think in number one, the winter Christmas elements are actually the thing that maybe is, like, well, but we'll wait till we get there. I don't want to spoil anything.
We'll call it a dominating factor.
Yeah, no, it's all, but with, I mean, like, Battleground, I like Battleground. It's not my favorite short story, but it totally makes sense to put on a Christmas list, right? I do love The Shining, obviously, like a lot of people do. So this one also, for me, deserved a spot on the list just because it's so good, you know, just quality-wise, it's really up there. And I wanted to have, between this and Misery, it's nice to have some King heavy hitters on this list. So, yeah, love it.
True.
Well, again, it's like the aesthetic, the atmosphere of just the green of the topiary animals. Am I saying that right, topiary? It's topiary.
Yeah,
right?
Topiary, yeah.
Just
topiary.
The greens and the snow and that combination just rings festive despite, you know, the swinging mallets and ghosts running around.
Yeah.
And you really
blood also.
You really feel the scope of, like, the winter in the book and the film, obviously. Like, both of them, I feel like you really feel the isolation and you feel the mountains, you know, the Colorado mountains. And I think that you know, like you were saying with Misery, it's a different feel and a broader Christmas feel to me in that regard.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I get why. I have no problem with any of these entries.
And so far. Well, also too, I mean, I don't know. I think ghosts are a little bit Christmassy. If you think about Christmas Carol and just the
Scrooge?
Dead coming. Yeah, yeah. No,
yeah. No, Muppet Christmas Carol?
The Muppet Christmas Carol? Yes, yeah, like Marley and Marley.
Yeah. And George C. Scott Christmas Carol? Have you seen that?
I love Marley and Marley. I love Muppet Christmas Carol. It's my favorite.
Well, like that deleted scene's coming back, Dan. Are you excited?
Yeah. Oh, I know. Yeah. I read about that. I think that deleted scene needs to be in there for pacing reasons. It's weird. They cut right from Fozzie Wig's party to... Anyway,
I'm ahead. I'm a little skeptical over
it's
the name of the song, though.
Too.
The song
the
is called...
Gone. When Love is Gone?
No, I thought they were researching the scene of Fuck Me Gonzo. That was really what they were reasserting.
That's the Muppets Blue Christmas.
Oh, that's right. That's Happy Time Murders.
Yeah.
That's another Brian Henson.
Blue Christmas.
I apologize.
Hey, but that is a good song, man.
I agree. Fuck Me Gonzo's a jam.
Wait, who sings it? Rizzo or Camilla or who?
It's a duet. Rizzo and,
Camilla.
What's their, Camilla, yeah.
I don't know if Camilla's in Mama Christmas Carol.
Well, this deleted scene. Yeah. They're in it.
Right, exactly.
Yep. So they're back in.
She's like,
oh my God. Oh,
Gonzo is definitely a, I have a bunch of Jim Henson books and they talk in, there's this one called The Works and it was kind of the first big coffee table book written about Jim Henson. And they have a breakdown of all the characters. And I think it's Dave Gels who does Gonzo's voice. Someone says, oh, yeah, you know, we always looked at Gonzo as having a healthy libido, even if it's just for chickens. Like, they're like, he's a real freak.
Yeah, like the description just says Gonzo, like... this Muppet fucks.
Gonzo and Animal are the real.
Oh, my God. Don't
real
get
freaks
those two
in the sheets.
Don't get those two together. Don't get those two
Party
together.
Party Muppets. Right.
They do on in a Muppet Family Christmas, one of my other favorite Muppet Christmas installments. Everyone's staying at Fozzie Bear's mother's house, a farmhouse, not unlike Annie Wilkes' house in Misery. Mm. And all the Muppets are there from Sesame Street, Fraggle Rock, the Muppets, and they don't have enough room for all of them to sleep. So Gonzo and Animal, they volunteer to sleep in coat hangers hanging from the ceiling because they're real weirdos. And so it's a little bit there. What were we saying about...
Stephen King's The Shining.
Right,
So far in the list, I think this is the only ghost story we have, right? I'm trying to Battlegrounds on a ghost
I think
story.
So.
If you count, are vampires ghosts? What's going on?
I mean,
physical
they live...
beings, I feel like.
Vampires are vampires.
Yeah.
They're their own thing.
Yeah.
Santa vampire is both ghost and vampire.
Santa makes an appearance again in The Shining originally. That also was cut. Do you remember
I keep,
that
that's right.
Think of,
see, we're
I
in a bear
think
suit.
Of like,
oh no,
oh, God! I'm trying.
Stephen King hates the movie because
business.
It wasn't included, so that's the main reason.
There's got to be. I'm trying to think of like a Santa or a vampire pun that combines like Chris Kringle, but there's not really anything. Or like Count Kringle. I don't know.
Count Kringle. That works.
Deck the halls with boughs of holly. Dracula, la 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 la. All right, there,
there we go.
Yeah,
we'll workshop it a little bit, but I think we got something.
We're almost there. I feel good about it.
They throw
next Christmas to figure it out.
They throw like garlic at him to feed him, and he's like, "No, don't you know I'm only allergic to cinnamon cloves,
mistletoe." Uh oh.
It's like
we're sitting on a gold mine.
Man.
Well,
Stephen King's
must be
The Shining.
Of holly,
I'll tell you what.
A stick
that's
of holly
right. Yeah.
The
I had The Shining. That was my number two, I think. And to turn the conversation in a completely different direction, like I had it because of the, like I don't like spending time with my family on Christmas anymore. So this was the story that I wanted to read. And I have got a lot of thoughts on any adaptation of The Shining. My favorite is The Simpsons adaptation of The Shining.
The Shining. You don't get sued.
Yeah, The Shining.
Yeah, love The Shining.
It's fantastic. Yeah, but this is like, I just liked the dysfunction and I wanted to kind of, like, if there was one thing that I wanted to read right now, it would be The Shining to kind of, like Christmas sometimes is just hard and you're supposed to, and I was kind of kidding at the beginning of the episode, but like it feels like you're supposed to be joyful and you're supposed to be happy. And I just like that The Shining is so, there are so few moments of happiness that when they're together, and it just, it's a nice kind of like recognition of that, you know.
Here's the question.
All four stories have been about people who are trapped somehow.
Yeah, that's even true. Battleground. Yeah,
you know, he's trapped inside the apartment.
We're not getting any like stands or you know like journey novels necessarily. These are all claustrophobic stories. I wanted to ask all of you: is anyone actually reading any King right now? Outside of like, okay, I have to read this book for the podcast. Is anyone reading King for Christmas comfort right now? I'm not. I'm reading the Lion, the Witch, and the War, or the Chronicles of Narnia series right now.
That's a very Christmassy atmosphere.
Yeah,
though.
I like to read fantasy epics during Christmas. Like I always like. Yeah.
Speaking of fantasy epics, I'm reading. I just started the final Frank Herbert Dune book, Chapter House.
Chapter House. Yeah. What do you think of Heretics of Dune?
I did not like Heretics of Dune. It's a bit of a mess.
It's all right. After God Emperor, you can't live up to
God Emperor of Dune.
What about Rachel and Jen? Where are y'all reading? What is like your actual Christmas reading right now?
Oh, right wait, now, we got actual.
I got actually, here.
Scored to Death. Yeah.
Scored to Death. J. Blake Fischer. It's his second book that he's written. It's just a bunch of interviews with really awesome horror composers.
Oh
so
my gosh, I got awesome.
Just came out. Yeah, it's got lots of great people, and I love film music. That's my thing. So
who are they
I'm
interviewing?
Really
like, is it horror specifically, or is it just composers?
Yeah, but I mean, some of them are like you know, like so Brad Fidel, so like Terminator and stuff like that. Yeah, Fright Night. So a lot of them is you know they cross over into other areas.
That looks like a hefty book too.
Oh yeah, it's hefty.
Like a very generous. Oh man, that's I gotta write this down.
Yeah. So.
And I think he was actually on an episode where we were talking about film scores, the author of that book, too.
Yeah, he's super, he gets around and he's super passionate and a great guy. So
Gonzo
I'm excited
style,
to read this one.
Apparently.
The first one is really good, too. So, yeah.
Gonzo, fuck to death.
That's like, oh
I'm kidding. I'm sorry.
Merry Christmas.
I have ruined Gonzo for all of our childhood listeners.
Right. For real, though, I got to read that. We're doing a Secret Santa on my wife's side of the family. We're not really doing like gifts for everyone, but everyone has like one Secret Santa. And the only thing I put on my list were Taking Shape 1 and 2. I'm hoping I get one of them because, I want to read some horror volumes. I'll have to read that Scored to Death, though. That's super cool. What about you, Jen? Yeah. What are you reading right now?
Well, I am in the middle of desperation right now for some upcoming episodes. And I probably am going to listen to The Stand again because it's just in my brain. Yeah. But, and this is a good segue, I actually just listened to our number one on the list for Christmas horror because I saw Jobis on Joanne on Instagram was talking about it. So our number one is The Breathing Method. Yay! And I just listened to it. It's so good. This is the final novella in different seasons about a young woman who gives birth on Christmas Eve, not Mary, but this story has a bit of a darker turn. And this was the only one that's on all of our lists. And I know that we
was
said
it really?
Like, it was, yeah. And I mean, there's an obvious connection there, but this was my number one. And reading it again, this is my favorite of King's novellas, of all of his novellas. It's my favorite in different seasons. It's my favorite in, the bar is not super high if you look outside of different seasons. But I loved it. It's so feminist, which is totally my jam. And when like I think about the rest of the novellas in different seasons, I love them all. I really do. And I don't want to sound like I'm knocking it, but they're all like boy stories, you know. And I'm not saying I can't get down with a story about boys, but like I just loved this story of this woman who's about to have a baby, and she's kind of scared, but she's trying to really be brave and strong, and it just goes so awry. And I loved the like King, I wonder if he wrote this like after he'd had his first children or when his children were young, because he talks about kind of the horrific quality of birth, which having been through it twice, it's terrifying. And now if you're listening and you're pregnant right now, you're going to be fine. And it's like, I'm fine now. But I just really liked that appreciation. I liked the conversation because I don't feel like we hear it that much in this kind of genre. So I loved it. And then there's the framing device of the club, which is so cool. And this one is actually set on Christmas. It's like specifically a Christmas story. It's one of the few that is, which I think is probably why, I don't want to speak for you all, but that's probably why it was on y'all's list. But so that's my piece about The Breathing Method. I think it's fantastic. It was a great listen. So, you know, you can find it on YouTube. So check it out. But yeah, what do y'all think of The Breathing Method?
It feels very cozy to me. And I think that's like what you were saying, like the club and that whole framing story, like it feels very, and like they were saying, they specify Christmas multiple times throughout it. So that's, it was my, the first one I thought of too for that same reason. But it does just feel very warm and cozy. So I don't know. I guess that's Christmas in my mind.
Well, yeah, it's the fireside chat, you know, that's what always calls out to me. Yeah, I mean, you mentioned, yeah, it's the framing device for me, actually, that feels the most Christmassy, even though the story they're telling, you know, is like definitely around Christmas officially. But I just think about the club and, you know, you start to kind of get nostalgic for that, as crazy as it sounds, just to be able to gather with friends and tell stories or just shoot the shit and have a drink, which is literally all they're really doing. They're just dressed up nice. You know what I mean?
Right. Very
it's
wealthy,
weird because the framing device, I think we talked about this on the episode, the framing device is actually what I, from a narrative standpoint, is what I like least about the overall story. Like I love the story they're telling, but the sort of story within the story, the whole framing device, it gets a little muddy for me. That being said, when we're thinking of Christmas stories, it's still the thing that immediately came to my mind, right? Which is like you said, Jen, I think is why it's on all of our lists.
I don't think this is better than The Shining. I'm just saying.
No,
like,
yeah,
we all agree. Like, this is just the most Christmassy holiday season-y.
Agreed,
of them all.
Yes.
Yeah.
Agreed.
And I think there is some, and like Rachel's saying with the atmosphere, there's something you said for that. The fact that we hear, when we hear Christmas King, we all go, oh yeah, the breathing method. Even if, though the opinions vary as to how good of a story it is in King's overall canon, it is the one I think that ubiquitously was still the most tied with Christmas. And a lot of our listeners recommended it too, obviously. So yeah. And it does, even in the scene, I mean, it's, what's the subtitle? Winter's Tale or something like that, right? For different seasons.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's right in the title, right? Like even the framing device has that with this idea of being in a cozy bar on Christmas. And then also when, with the, you know, the corpse giving birth or whatever, that whole thing happening, that's under a winter moon in the middle of the season also. Like everything about this story just really takes place in that very specific environment. So yeah, it makes sense why it's on here.
Well, and it happens because it's snowing, because the cab slips on ice. So that's like, it's actually a factor in the events of the story as well. And I think, Dan, you were mentioning earlier, like there's this ghost story element to like Christmas. Like I remember I had one night where I just couldn't sleep on Christmas and I stayed up all night reading this scary story. And I can't even remember what the book was because it was probably 10. And then I just got in my head that I'm going to read a scary story after everybody goes to bed on Christmas Eve. And I'm going to stay up. And I think I've only been able to actually get past 10 pages once, but I just had this in my head that it's like, this is a good time for scary stories. And it's like, there's still enough magic in the air, I think, that it kind of cuts the scariness, you know, and it doesn't feel so like desolate, you know,
which I feel like is kind of like a Christmas Carol too, right? Like the Christmas Carol is, it's ghosts and there are scary elements, but it's not a full-on,
well, yeah, like Stevens, for example, there's something supernatural about Stevens, right? And then there's some, there are books, there are these books that never were, these books from another dimension, there's this whole element there that's going on.
I think so, and I was reading it this time, and I was like, is this a level of the tower somewhere that kind of opens to other places? Yeah. And it doesn't specifically say that at all. That's just me speculating, and I am not a noted tower head, so I could be completely wrong about that. But, there's, like, a jukebox from a brand that he's never heard of, you know, and, like, books, or, like, books that weren't published in this realm. So it's just, it's mysterious, but we don't find out enough to kind of lose that magical mystery, you know?
Yeah, the mystery the mystery remains.
Exactly, yeah. And I think it's like your presents that you haven't opened yet because it's not Christmas morning yet, or Santa hasn't brought them yet. And I also think, exactly, yeah. This is the thing when we were talking about the Halloween stories, especially when I think of a story I want to read on a holiday, I want it to be digestible on that holiday also. And that's one thing I like about the breathing method, is I could theoretically get through this all on Christmas Day, you know, because it's not like 500 pages, or like I'm not reading The Stand on Christmas Day, you know. And it's, so there's like this special quality of, I'm going to celebrate by reading this book, and then I'm going to move on after the holiday's over. So that was one of the things that I was looking for. And like a digestible audiobook for me, it's like a couple of hours, and this one is. So that's our top collective five. But now let's go around and pour a little eggnog out for the story we had on our personal list that maybe fell off the sleigh. And I've already said mine, which was Elevation, and it's good because it fell off the sleigh and then it just like floated off into space. So it's still good. Maybe it'll float back. But Dan, you and I both had some oddballs on our list, and we both said, I have my reasons in our email. So I am curious what
I want to guess the reasons, if you name them.
Go, all right. So, yeah. So my oddball one was I mentioned already, the Dark Tower 7, the Dark Tower.
Mm-hmm.
What do you think is my... What do you say? The epilogue, yeah. Oh, you know what's funny, Justin?
That's all you were thinking of?
No, it wasn't, but that makes total sense, though.
All right, Dandelion?
That's the perfect reason.
Dandelion's the other one?
Can't spoil it. But.
Yeah, we're sorry, go ahead, Jen. Were you
saying I was just going to say we got to make sure we don't spoil, but there's definitely a holiday element.
That very good point. I'll say this about the epilogue. No, you're totally right, Justin. I hadn't thought of that, but I will say the image of hot cocoa.
Yes.
Say that.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes. Exactly.
Yeah.
For the epilogue.
Yeah.
No, and I don't think this is spoiling too much. So I mentioned Dandolo earlier, who lives.
Oh, yeah, that was my other guess.
Who lives in a very Christmassy part of Midworld. What's the actual region called? The something White Plains. It's like a snowy. It's like a snowy region of Midworld, but. That characters in the book get to. I'm trying not to spoil too much.
Yeah.
But and
Snowdash?
Yes.
Snowboard.
There it is.
Yeah. But no, so you there's a land it's not the whole novel, but it's toward the end of the novel. There's a land that some characters get to that has a very Christmassy type villain and a very Christmassy type house and a very Christmassy type community. So that's one aspect of it. The epilogue certainly makes a great case for it. But more than anything, too, I mentioned earlier, I really do like to read high fantasy during Christmas time. It doesn't have to be Christmas related necessarily. Chronicles of Narnia is very Christmassy. I tend to reread Lord of the Rings a lot during Christmas, although Lord of the Rings isn't specifically Christmas related, although there's a lot of description of comfort and whatnot. I think maybe what it is that fantasy epics tend to come out during Christmas, like Harry Potter.
Yeah.
Harry Potter's very Christmassy too, I think. So I think and
the Star Wars saga.
Yeah, totally. Those all come out during the holidays, and Dune, I guess, will come out too. But so when I think about reading high fantasy, maybe we think about what is King's magnum fantasy opus, it's the Dark Tower books. So my mind immediately went to the individual reasons I already mentioned, and the epilogue is a good one too, but also to just because I really like reading fantasy around Christmas, which I know is maybe an indirect connection to the holiday, but my mind is always going to go there. So that was mine.
Hey, that works. Yeah. Rachel, what was your honorable mention?
My honorable mention was Needful Things, and I have my own reasons for this. So I have worked retail on and off in various capacities my whole life. And even when I read Needful Things for the first time, I kind of put it in the perspective of the holidays in retail. Because to me, you've got this shop and he's finding the perfect gift for all these people. And then it goes bad and you've got all these people fighting with each other and these gifts are at the center of it. And these are people that, under normal circumstances are friendly and they get along. But now that these things are involved, it turns into something darker. And also, I remembered that in the adaptation, that there's a couple of Christmassy songs in the movie. So I don't think I'm totally off base. I think that they play Ave Maria, and there's also the Nutcracker Suite.
Yeah,
so,
that dominates the trailer especially, I think.
Yeah, so the film itself, I think, even feels a little bit more Christmassy than the book, but I still think that those reads, it makes sense. If you read it or watch it with that perspective, to me, it feels very Christmassy and actually helps like reduce some of my anxiety of having to deal with shoppers.
Well, Rachel,
in this
on top of that, the book does end with him leaving kind of on a sleigh driven by an elf.
I
mean, if we're looking at it that way, now is the elf actually Leland Gaunt? We'll never know.
See?
That's up for another healthy debate.
Maybe
on that
he's
episode.
Stephen King Santa.
Neither was I. But that was a great debate.
Stephen King is Santa King.
King. Gaunt is like Stephen King's version of Santa.
I guess.
Yeah. I wasn't on the Needful Things episode, but wasn't that a huge talk?
I think Randall's whole life, but I think it was proven that Randall was right somehow, which I think is so stupid.
Wait, which side was Randall?
I think Leland does turn into like a little creature at the end. He's not being driven off by it.
I always thought that's
the elf.
What it was. What else would it be?
I thought he was in the actual carriage being driven away by this creature. I think he was like taking the reins and.
No, I've always thought that he was actually this little goblin creature. Like that was his true form.
You were correct.
Like inside.
He's a little goblin creature. Yeah.
What a silly ending. I mean, I love Neeple. I really like Neeple.
Look, great book until the last 10 pages. Yeah.
But it is, you know, I like what Rachel's saying, though. It is that kind of Tickle Me Elmo thing, right? They're the Furby or like the people arguing and killing each other over total shit, over stuff that's worthless and is probably going to fall apart pretty soon anyway. So,
well,
yeah,
I could bounce off of that with my selection.
Yeah, what's yours?
Yeah,
because
sure,
this one, well, one of them was the Dead Zone, but that's purely aesthetic because so much of that takes place in the snow. All right, mine is another story where there's a bunch of people who normally get along, who get together, and their lives are turned upside down in like the matter of an evening because of some interloper, and that is Storm of the Century, which is a Stephen King story that he wrote as a miniseries back in the 90s. And funny enough, he did an interview recently where he talks about this being one of his favorite stories, if not his favorite miniseries. I think you really like it. It's... You know, a lot of times, as we discussed over the years, not just us, but people who have read Stephen King over the last 45 years, sometimes Uncle Stevie pulls his punches. I'll tell you right now, this is almost as grim as he gets, the ending of this story. This is depressing as hell. So,
Did you have the... my roommate in college, Bill Hansen, who we've had on the pod a few times, who did the first Survivor Type adaptation, he had a book that was this... Was that the script of Storm of the Century, or was it the short story?
If it's a novelization of the miniseries, maybe.
But it was based on an unpublished novel of his, right? Is that the gimmick of it?
I don't think so.
I think it was just written for the screen. Yeah. And I've got it. If my cord was longer, I would go get it. But I found it at a used bookstore a while ago, and I think it's the screenplay.
Okay. I got to watch it. Is it streaming anywhere? I should look that up.
Stephen King said it's on YouTube.
Oh, so he's endorsing us to be old pirates, huh? Storm of the Century.
Good cast.
Cool. I may have to watch that.
Interesting accents. There's definitely
Rachel, have you seen Storm of the Century?
I haven't, no.
Yeah. I remember hearing a lot about it.
The bad guy in this is one of his best bad guys.
Oh, wow.
It is, yeah. And I mean, he's got a lot in common with Leland Gaunt, you know?
Definitely.
Also, Tim Daly is in it, and I love me some Wings.
Tim Daly is definitely doing a nor'easter accent.
Wait. So King has had Tim Daly in the lead in one of his miniseries, and then Steven Weber in the lead of the other, so he's really cornered the King
originally,
or the Wings market.
I think originally they wanted Tim Daly in The Shining.
He'd be good, actually. I mean, he's too old now, but he would have been good back then for it. Yeah. Tim Daly's great, man. He's great in The Sopranos.
He's great. Yeah. Yes. Well, and Crystal Bernard, I think, was going to play Wendy for a while, but then
she'd be good
backed
too.
Out because of the accent.
Oh, my God.
You know?
Man, they really do have all 4 hours. I remember being very comforted by Wings as a kid. I remember the theme said there's all 4 hours and 8 minutes of Storm of the Century is on YouTube. And it was only uploaded in October. I wonder if King was behind that. He's like,
what's the username? Is it like Kevin Sang or something like
that? It's Full Screen Movies Collection.
Oh, that's Stephen King, 100%.
That's him. Yeah, the thing of evil is the last part of it. Yeah, yeah, I like Storm of the Century a lot. I am on the record as saying I don't love Stephen King's dialogue a lot of times, and that's neither here nor there. But I do think that's a really good. Speaking of people at each other's throats over the holidays, I like that one. Maybe time to revisit it. So that's ours, and we have some constant listener suggestions also from, I believe this is from Patreon. So Ivan said The Shining, and Damien said a story that I'd never heard of called Rush Call.
Yeah,
I didn't know this one either.
Yeah, he said it later appeared in Essay's collection released in 2000 called Secret Windows. And I do have Secret Windows. I just have not read it all yet. So I'm going to have to do that, I guess, before Christmas. But the description he had was Dr. Thorpe climbs into a car on Christmas Eve and operates on a young boy trapped in the car. Oh, I have read this. It's pretty good. He saves the boy's life, removing his appendix in the process, and discovers the true meaning of Christmas. I think it was written when he was very young. Like, it
sounds like
reads. Yeah. It read when I remember reading it and thinking, like, it might have even been before Carrie. It may have
that sounds very explicitly Christmas too.
Yeah,
in a way that maybe his other work isn't.
It sounds almost like the story within the breathing method, except instead of, you know, removing an appendix, it's removing a human's head away from a body.
Right. And then another human's head, you know.
Exactly. But hey, Merry Christmas all the way.
Exactly. Yeah. Hey, Christmas is about birth. So yeah.
It is.
Anyways.
The original birth.
That's true, yeah.
The first birth ever.
The first birth that mattered.
First birth that mattered.
Oh. Allegedly.
Allegedly.
So, speaking of the first birth that mattered, Brian and Rachel also suggested the breathing method. Amanda and Brett said one for the road, which we agree with. Brett said riding the bullet, which I would like to hear a justification for that. Not that I don't believe you, but I'm interested in that connection.
I'm trying to think of that. I mean, I probably only read that once.
Yeah, I've only read that. Well, I mean, it's kind of like a road novel, right? From what I remember. Mm-hmm.
But there's memories within the novel. I know.
I sort of think of, I don't know, traveling on long roads as being kind of a winter thing. Let me see. I'm just gonna do a little refresher.
A bit more as like a Halloween story. Though.
Yeah, I thought it was
the whole cemetery. Yeah.
But he does go to he's going to visit his mom, I guess. So he's like going home to like take care of his mom.
Maybe there's that part of it.
Yeah.
Yeah, like the home for the holidays element of it. Yeah.
Because I know he's in college, so maybe it's him going home over the break.
Makes sense.
It's just been a while since I've read it. And I have David Arquette in my head connected to that.
What's that in? Everything's Eventual, I think. Or is it later than that?
I think eventually it made its way into the short story collection, but I think the movie even came up before it was an actual collection.
So we'll get to that in there, but it's 2002, so we'll be getting to that in what, a few years?
2030?
In a while.
We'll have to remember this conversation, see what our Christmas feelings are around it.
That's right, yeah. Once we've actually read it, recently enough to remember. Yeah. And Bryant suggested Storm of the Century also, he agrees with you, Justin. And then Tim, I don't think it's Tim Daly.
Tiny Tim? Is it Tiny Tim?
Oh, maybe it is Tiny Tim. Actually, he did say his last name. I just took it out. Because
Tim Bargalush, the old school.
Ah.
Old school listener.
Oh, hey,
from
Tim,
the very beginning, I think, this person.
Oh, yeah. Well, he suggested Children of the Corn. He said, which I love this because it goes with my whole Santa is a vampire thing. He who walks behind the rose could be seen as sort of a Santa-like figure who bestows his blessing on good little children who follow his will. And hey, I'd be lying if I didn't get a craving for some good old-fashioned corn around the holidays. And yes, corn
that's
is always
a good,
delicious.
Or a perverted Jesus. I mean, we haven't talked about Jesus a lot in this podcast, but we're talking, should have chose The Stand because it's so Christian.
Right.
I mean, at the end of the day, isn't Santa Claus a perverted Jesus if we're looking at it that way?
I think so.
It works either way. That's
the pull quote for the episode. That's the pull quote.
Exactly. and so those are all of our listener suggestions. So thank you so much for participating in this conversation that's taken some twists and turns in the sleigh. So looks like the fire is dying and there's a Santa Claus hovering outside my window begging to be let in. And I got to go get away from that.
Count Kringle.
Count Kringle. I think that's going to stick. I like that.
Yeah. I guess you could do Santa Claus, CLAWS. Vampires kind of have claws. I don't know.
I think that's more like a Santa werewolf.
Yeah.
This is totally unrelated, but you guys should watch the new Creepshow holiday special that hits Shudder tomorrow.
Is there a werewolf story in it?
That's what happens.
Really?
Santa Claus werewolf?
Yeah.
Wow, that sounds awesome, actually. That's
but no Santa Claus vampire.
I mean, I guess I actually liked that werewolf segment with Kid Cudi in it. I actually thought
that was my favorite. The werewolf segment was my favorite Creepshow entry. Absolutely.
Yeah, and it's funny because Little Yachty's in this one. So
is he really?
I don't know. I don't know where they're going with that trend. But
I mean, I think Kid Cudi's actually a very good actor. Little Yachty, I don't know. Little Yachty plays several different characters on his albums. He plays Lil Yachty, Lil Boat, and then his uncle Darnell. So maybe he could be a good actor.
Well, if it's the season, why is he playing the Lil Yachty drummer boy?
I don't.
Tiny.
You gotta ask him.
Yeah, I mean,
come on. Lil Yachty is sitting there for you.
I feel like a lot of rapper actors are better than most musician actors.
I have an argument that Method Man is the best musician turned actor. He's amazing on the
crazy Deuce. Good. The Wire, The Deuce. He's Method Man's an I love how I think How High is a very funny movie, actually.
When you and Kevin Smith.
They dig up John Quincy Adams' skeleton, break off his fingers, and smoke them like joints to get smart. That alone makes
does
that
it work?
Perfection.
I don't think it does, because that's like a substitute for this strain of marijuana they've been using to.
Dan, I think you gave the novelization a 5 out of 5 on Goodreads.
The How High novelization. By you need like a fake author name, like a Glenn Blaylock, or whatever it is.
George Stark.
Dennis Etchison writing under a pseudonym, writing the How High novelization.
Another pseudonym.
Yeah. Anyway.
Well, speaking of side projects, Rachel, what do you have coming up? I know you said you watched The Creepshow. Are you reviewing that or writing about it?
Yeah, I'll be reviewing that for Room Morgue, and then just my normal. I have 2 monthly articles on Nightmare on Film Street every month, and so I should have one coming out here in a few days, actually, about the Terminator 2 soundtrack. So.
Oh, Jen.
So good.
Oh my gosh, Terminator 2 is my all-time favorite movie. I'm sorry, listeners, I'm going to talk for 30 minutes about
it. It's a perfect film. So
It is. It's the best film ever made. Yeah.
Yes.
It's my first R-rated film. I think it's a lot of people's first R-rated films.
Yeah.
Yeah. There. I just rewatched it and still just perfect. So yeah I'll have that coming up. And yeah, you can usually find me haunting around those sites all the time. So.
Oh, nice. Oh, I can't wait to read that. Justin, what do you have coming up?
Well, I'll be doing some more Losers Club stand coverage. Jen, you and I were on the first episode.
We were.
And also over at the Halloweenies podcast, we just wrapped up our Friday the 13th season. And we'll be doing, I guess, a Black Christmas 2006 episode, right, Dan?
We nailed down the date for that too.
We're looking forward to that. Eventually, we'll get to the original Black Christmas. That'll be like the 5 year anniversary. Yeah. And then, so you'll see me crawling around Losers Club and Halloweenies for the most part.
Lurking. Caffrey, what do you have coming up for Slay SMR?
Slay SMR. So we just had our Gremlins episode, and I think by the time this episode, the one we're doing now drops, I will have my Batman Returns Slay SMR. That's what I'm doing this weekend.
What's the line? Yeah, Kiss could be deadly.
Are you a Batman Returns fan or not?
We've had this argument too much over the last 15 years.
I like Batman Returns a lot better than Batman 1989, but Batman Returns?
We're the flip.
But do you like Batman Returns? Like, I still like
Batman. I would recommend it to somebody.
You recommend it, yeah. I love it. I think it's my second favorite Batman movie. That's on there. You can see me crawling around Losers Club and Halloweenies. I've got an appearance on Psychoanalysis coming up.
That's right.
And I think that's all. Yeah, I'm just laying low for the holidays. So yeah.
Yeah. Well, and like you said, your episode on Gremlins is going to be dropping on Christmas Eve for Psychoanalysis, which was so much fun. And I'm actually going to start editing it tonight, so I can't wait to go back to it.
We had a blast. I tried really hard, and I think I did a pretty good job on my Slay SMR episode. I tried not to touch on stuff that we discussed in the ASMR is such a specific audience, right? Like, I don't know if I have to worry too much about overlap, but I tried to really talk about different things. So yeah, I'm really excited to hear that. I had a blast being on there with y'all.
Oh, that was really fun. And then on Christmas Day, we're actually dropping an episode on the original Black Christmas with Joe Lipsett from Horror Queers. And that was really fun because I got out my feminist soapbox and just went to town. So that was really fun. Oh no, I liked it because I like it's so feminist.
Well, that was the argument for the remake, is that this was the 2019 version was supposed to be the feminist take on it. That's a whole other podcast.
That is, yeah. I haven't seen that, but I think I'm going to try to watch it sometime this Christmas. But so those are coming up, and then our theme for January is going to be depression. And we are going to start with The Babadook, which is one of my all-time favorite horror movies. And I cannot wait to talk about that, even though in the context of very sad, depressing things. Mm-hmm. But it's going to be fun, and we're going to have a great time. And we're also, you can find me on the Losers Club talking about The Stand for hours and hours on end. And upcoming talking about Desperation and The Regulator, so I got to keep reading on those.
Regulators.
But so as yeah.
Every time. Yeah, it is, every time.
It was a clear black night.
Exactly. Yeah, it was a clear. I was reading Regulators when Biden won the election, like when it was made, you know, when they announced it, I was like halfway through The Regulators. So, yeah.
Oh, yeah?
Not my favorite King book. It will always have a special. I mean, I actually like Regulators, but it'll always have a special place in my heart now because of that.
Oh, yeah. When we regulated some stuff. Anyways,
we regulated
common sense.
Exactly. Yeah. Right. Yeah. We were desperate, and then we regulated. So we'll see how it goes. But so as for the Losers Club, we have a lot going on right now. Just today, we kicked off coverage of The Stand on CBS All Access. I'm sorry, CBS All Access is The Stand, which is the official name. So check our feeds for how you can get a free week on us to check it out. You can use some kind of code that I can't remember right now, but... there's lots of information on the socials. We're going to be doing weekly recaps. I think we're going to be writing weekly recaps on Consequence of Sound also. And we just interviewed the showrunner, Henry Cavill, which was really fun.
I think it's Ben Cavill. Henry Cavill is
Ben
Superman.
Ben Cavill.
I was going to say,
on my brain.
Well, we got the Snyder Cut coming out next month, so we want to make sure we got him on the pod.
Well, look, we didn't use video when we were talking to him, so I was just picturing Henry Cavill the whole time, which was, you know.
Not bad.
Right. But so we did just interview him, and he talked a lot about Stephen King's Coda and actually made me really excited for that. So
yeah, I'm wondering when that's going to be. I'm really excited about that.
Well, apparently it's going to be Franny-centric, so that's speaking my language. So we'll see. I'm really crossing my fingers on that. But we also might have an interview with one of the cast coming up, a real Bauer Hour, if you will. Mm. I don't know if we can say it yet, but make sure to stay tuned to the socials for more information about that. And those socials are at Losers Club Pod. Next up, book-wise, is Desperation and the Regulators, and we've got some exciting stuff planned for that, so make sure you're reading. And that is our Christmas King episode. And I did not sing, "Here Comes Stephen King, Here Comes Stephen King,"
but
one more time.
Now.
And I just, I know I had to get it out of my system. It's been like racking my brain. Thank you so much for joining us. We hope you're having a relaxing and safe holiday. And we are so grateful that you spent a little bit of that holiday with us. And we hope your holidays are filled with, that's our sign off. We're ready.
Long days. And
pleasant nights.
It's easier on Zoom. Yeah.
It is. Yeah, I need to pull out my conducting. Now we have a sign off.
This is the end of our show. For now. We hope you enjoyed this production. If you like our programming, consider searching for other Bloody Disgusting podcasts, such as Creepy, Horror Queers, The Boo Crew, SCP Archives, Nightlight, Margaret's Garden, and more.